Lord Russell, what are the motives that prompt men to want power?
I should suppose that the original impulse, out of which subsequent power-loving people got their drive, was in tribes that were liable to occasional famine, and where you wanted to be sure that if the food supply ran short, it wouldn't be you that would suffer.
Would you say that there can be good as well as bad motives for people wanting power?
I should most certainly. I should say that almost everybody who has had any important effect in the world has been actuated by some form of love of power. And that applies to saints as well as to sinners, applies to, I think, every energetic person.
Doesn't it often happen, though, that people start off by wanting power to do good things, which is a good motive, and then they fall in love with power itself, and it becomes a bad motive?
It happens very often indeed. That is why Lord Acton was quite right to say that power corrupts, because pleasure in the exercise of power is something that grows with experience of power. For example, Cromwell. I have no doubt that Cromwell went into politics with entirely laudable motives, because there were certain things he thought extremely important to the country, which he wanted to see done. But after he'd been in power for a certain length of time, he just wanted power. And that is why on his deathbed he said that he was afraid he'd fallen from grace.
Do you want power yourself?
Oh, certainly, yes. I think every person who shows much energy wants power. But I only want one sort of power. I want power over opinion.
Do you think that the power you've had over opinion has corrupted you?
Well, I dare say it has. It's not for me to say that. I think other people must judge of that.
Take the power of authority, the police, the apparatus of government. Do you think that needs curbing?
Yes, it needs the possibility of pulling up the holders of immediate power if they do wrong. That was the idea of the power of impeachment. You could hold up a man if he seemed to be doing wrong. And it's very important that that should exist, very important.
But has it gone too far, though? And do you think that people now need more protection against the arbitrary power of the police and so on?
Oh, I think it certainly is true, but it's not very easy to see what to do about it in the modern world. Decisions have to be taken quickly. And if they're to be taken quickly, you must leave the capacity for decisions in the hands of very few. So that it's not very easy, but it's a very important problem and one that ought to be considered.
How would you deal with it?
Well, it depends upon what department of life you're thinking of. I should say, for instance, that police power has been proved in many modern states to be a very dangerous thing indeed. And wherever the communists have been trying to get hold of a state they hadn't previously dominated, the first thing they start to get hold of is the management of the police. And then they can settle who they'll put in jail, and they can cook the evidence as to what he's done. So that I think the power of the police can be a very dangerous thing, and has been proved so. Now, I should like to see everywhere two police forces, one to prove guilt and the other to prove innocence.
But now, wouldn't that rather complicate the issue and become very expensive for the government concerned?
Well, certainly, I think it might. But suppose, for instance, that you were unjustly accused of a murder. The taxpayer pays all the expense of proving that you did the murder, and you, out of your own pocket, have to prove pay the expense of proving that you didn't. And that seems hardly fair. We're in the habit of saying that it's better that 99 guilty men should escape than that one innocent man should be punished. But we conduct our affairs on the opposite principle, because we think that the taxpayer should pay for the proof of guilt and the private person should pay for the proof of innocence.
Yes, but it can't very often happen that somebody is wrongly convicted. And is it really worthwhile to the state to go to this enormous expense in order to establish every now and again that somebody may have been unjustly accused?
We don't know how often it happens. That's part of the argument. It's not the sort of thing the police will like to disclose. For what we know, it may happen very often. We really don't know. And in any case, the enormous expense that you speak of is not more than the expense which is at present incurred in proving guilt.
To move over a bit more to governmental actions, do you think that governments ought not to have quite such freedom to decide issues quickly without referring back to electorates and so on? And if so, wouldn't this make an awful lot of inefficiency in action?
Well, yes, I think it might. And there are some things where, in the world that we live in now, it's impossible to refer things to a referendum or anything of that sort. Questions of peace and war, which are the most important of all, have to be decided quickly. And it would require a very great deal of change in the institutions of the whole world to make the decision of peace or war one which could be taken slowly and deliberately, which would be a very good thing if you could.
Can we turn for a moment to another form of power, economic? Do you think that Marx placed too much emphasis on the importance of economic power?
Yes, Marx, in the first place, put much too much emphasis on economic as opposed to other forms of power. And secondly, misled by the state of business in the 40s in England, he thought that it was ownership that gives power and not executive control. And both those led him to propose a panacea for all the ills of the world, which proved entirely fallacious.
How would you rate the importance of economic power?
Oh, the importance of economic power is very great indeed, but it's only one form of power. I couldn't say that it was more important than military power or more important than propaganda power.
Do you think that economic power needs curbing?
Yes, I think every kind of power needs curbing. Because certainly the power to starve large regions is very undesirable. I think the economic power of certain regions in the Middle East to withhold oil, if they like, is not at all a desirable kind of thing.
Propaganda power. How important is that?
Oh, propaganda power is enormously important, and its importance has always been recognized. People say the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. That means that the blood of the martyrs has great propaganda power. And people say great is truth and it will prevail, by which they mean that the opinion now currently held will prevail. And in all sorts of ways, propaganda is enormously important. Certainly, the growth of the Christian religion was entirely without the help of either economic or military power.
But do you think that propaganda power is always bad?
Oh, certainly not. Oh, no. It's bad when it... It diffuses bad opinions and good diffuses good ones. I certainly don't think it's bad. You would have to say that all education was bad if you said that, because all education consists of a kind of propaganda.
What about the strength of propaganda power? Does that need curbing? And have we got ourselves into such a state that people are so bombarded with mass communications that they don't know how to think clearly anymore?
Oh, certainly, it needs enormous curbing. I understand that the opinions of the average Russian as to what takes place in Western countries are very, very far from the truth. And that is due to the propaganda control over education which exists in communist countries. And a slightly less tight control in non-communist countries. but still a very great control, aiming not to make people think truly, but making them think what their government thinks.
What about the West? Does it need curbing much in the West?
It certainly needs curbing, not as much, but it does need curbing. Because you will find that in what is taught in schools and even in universities, there is not a free and unfettered competition between different kinds of opinion. But certain opinions are very much favored at the expense of others.
How important is this whole question of the use and abuse of power?
I think it's of quite enormous importance. And in fact, I think it's almost the main difference between a good government and a bad one. That in a good government, power is used with limitations and with checks and balances. And in a bad government, it's used tyrannically. I think it's enormously important.
Do you think that, broadly speaking, all the democratic systems in the West produce a reasonable balance between the need of a government to take decisive action and the need to make sure that people in a majority are more or less behind the government in that action?
Well, they're certainly very much better than totalitarian governments. Very much better, for that reason that they have a certain ultimate curb on power. But I think there ought to be some rather more immediate curb than very occasional general elections. In the modern world, where things are so closely integrated, that is hardly enough. And you ought to have more, I think, in the way of referendum.
Don't you think that referendums would be rather a clumsy way of doing this?
Oh, they'd be clumsy and slow. But I think they might be better than a system where it's possible at any moment for a government to plunge its country into utter and total disaster without consulting anybody.
Thank you, Lord Russell.